We are inching closer to AW All in Texas. This is your AW Dynamite review. You know, for the second week in a row, the Beast Mortos gets the main event spot. Look at this guy. This guy is riding high, man. He was in the main event last week at Arena Mexico, picked up a win. Tonight, he didn't pick up a win, but he was in the main event again against the man who may well end up as the next AEW World Champion. It was Hangman Adam Page and the Beast Mortos closing the show tonight. We may have to start calling him Main Event Mortos. It's funny how this works, man. This guy's fortunes have changed almost overnight. They actually had a pretty good match. Ended kind of abruptly. We went off the air with an attempted murder by Jon Moxley with a chain trying to choke Hangman Adam Page to death in the middle of the ring. It just, Ed Swoggle, I looked over and saw Sami Zayn dancing on my screen as I was talking about Hangman Page nearly being murdered at the end of the show, and it made me laugh. We are heading into All In now, where Jon Moxley has all the heat on Hangman going into the pay-per-view. How will he react next week? We'll have to wait and see. We also tonight had two four-way matches. I feel like I was watching the King of the Ring and Queen of the Ring again. We had one for the men, one for the women, to decide who would enter number one in their respective casino gauntlet matches at All In. Because Tony Khan made the announcement a few days ago that there will be a casino gauntlet for the men and the women on that show. I think this is only the second one they've ever done for the women. The first one was the one where Megan Bain debuted on Dynamite many months ago. And so now we know who will be entering number one. For the men, it will be Mark Briscoe, who never wins anything. He actually got a win tonight. And on the women's side, it will be Chris Statlander. She will be entering number one in the women's casino gauntlet match in Texas. We also have a big tag team match that has now been confirmed. If you've been watching the shows, you could have figured out what it would be. But it has been confirmed for All In, and a stipulation has been added to this tag team match involving the Young Bucks. We'll talk about what that is. And a big match next week on Dynamite. You know, next week they're celebrating 300 episodes. And we have Kota Ibushi, who made his in-ring return to Dynamite tonight, is going to go one-on-one against Kazuchika Okada. Okada, Ibushi. We have not seen these men in the ring one-on-one since the finals of the G1 Climax. What was it now? 4 years ago, probably. That was the match where Ibushi did the Phoenix Splash, and he got hurt. And he hasn't been the same since. And that was a pretty shitty way to end the G1 Climax that year. We're going to get them in the ring on Dynamite next week. And judging from the way that Ibushi looked when we saw him on Collision and the way he looked tonight, just physically and the way that he was moving around, this is someone who's a lot closer to the old Ibushi than he was the last Ibushi that we saw on TV, which did not look like Kota Ibushi. Thankfully, this is a lot closer to what I think AEW was hoping to get when they signed him to a contract. Hopefully, we get that in the ring next week. And I fully expect that next week we will get the return of Kenny Omega coming to the aid of his fellow Golden Lovers. So that'll be on episode 300 of Dynamite next week. Let's talk about the show. It was Dynamite here for Wednesday, June 25th, 2025. I am the Solemn Monster with your final Dynamite review here for the very hot month of June. Still in the midst of this heat wave here in New York. Hopefully it's not too bad wherever you are. It's finally supposed to break tomorrow. It'll only be 82. I'm already looking forward to it. I can't wait. You know, one thing, I guess it's sort of a benefit, though. The one thing when it's this hot, I mean, literally, I mean, it's like hell on earth. For the first time in my life, I actually had heated seats in the bathroom. So there you go. At least there's some perks to it, I guess, right? Some people have heated seats in their car. Some people have heated seats in other places. Like and subscribe. Super chats are open. I thank you all for whatever support you throw my way, and I will be reading whatever messages come in, and we'll hang out a little bit later on in the stream. But let's get into this show here. Let's not waste any more time. Almost as hot as Mortos, says Daddy Ugarte. Well, with that giant mask he wears. I wouldn't want to wrestle in a mask like that. I'm sure that doesn't feel too good. Dynamite opened with Carmen Sandiego walking backstage with Luther when she was ambushed by Mercedes Moné. Mercedes dragged Toni Storm from the back out onto the stage, tossed her down on the ground. She grabbed the microphone and asked her if this is what she wanted. Mercedes said that she embarrassed her and called her a bitch. She then clamped on a crossface until Mina Shirakawa ran out to force Mercedes to back off. And then Mercedes repeated the same line Toni Storm said to her last week and said, "Darling, let the games begin." And this is how we kicked off Dynamite tonight. This was fine, but we've got 2 weeks left. So hopefully on that last Dynamite, you know, before we get to Arlington, we'll get these two in the ring together and put a microphone in their hand and let's get dueling promos, you know, right before the pay-per-view. I think Toni Storm will win that battle. It's almost a mismatch, but hopefully we'll get that. Now, they have announced that on Dynamite 300 next week, Mercedes Moné will defend her TBS championship against Mina Shirakawa. Now, she's already defended her title against Mina before, and that was Double or Nothing, I believe. But they're going to have a championship match on Dynamite next week. And while it seems impossible to conceive that after all this time, undefeated Mercedes Moné, what is she now, 29-0? I don't even know what her record is. I don't know. It's almost impossible to conceive that this close to Texas, they might actually beat Mercedes next week. But I think there's a very good chance that that's what we see, because as I look ahead to Texas, right, we've been talking about this. What is the end goal here of this match between Toni Storm and Mercedes Moné? You've got champion against champion. Only the world title is on the line. If Toni Storm goes in there and is the first person to beat Mercedes, what does it really accomplish, right? Other than maybe starting the beginning of like a downfall or like a downward spiral type story for Mercedes, which they certainly could do, but I'm not betting against Mercedes in that match. Now, if she goes in there and wins the world championship and still has the TBS title, that serves nobody. Absolutely nobody. And it actually does quite the opposite for the women's division. So to get the TBS title off of her before Texas would make a lot of sense to me if you are going to have her win the world championship, which I think she probably is. So I'm looking ahead to next week and I'm saying, well, after what we saw at the beginning of this show where Mercedes ambushed this woman and left her laying, what if we get Toni Storm getting her revenge next week by costing Mercedes the TBS title against Mina Shirakawa? Purely, not only as a way for her to get revenge on Mercedes, but as a way to get that title off of her before we go to Texas. Now, the one drawback of that is I think most people watching, if that happened next week, would pretty much deduce from that we're getting a title change on July 12th. It would almost, not even almost, I mean, it would spoil the outcome of that championship match between Toni and Mercedes. But if the idea is to get the world title on Mercedes, then I think she needs to drop that title next week. And you can give her the out if it's Toni Storm who plays a role in her losing the championship. You know, it might be a cheap win for Mina, but a win is a win, and it gets that belt away from Mercedes so other people can fight for it, other people can hold it, if the plan is to put the world championship on her. And it's the 300th episode, so you can't rule out that Toni Khan might not want to do something big on that episode. So, as I sit here now, if I were a betting man, and I'm not, you know, betting on this show, but if I was, I think there's a damn good chance we get a TBS title change next week. And then that paves the way for Mercedes to kick off her world championship run, which I feel like is inevitable. Now, backstage, the Young Bucks said that they used their backstage pull to move Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay's tag team match tonight from hour two to the first hour. And not only the first hour, but they said that their match was actually coming up next. And they queued up Will Ospreay's music. He came to the ring. He was still taping his wrists and he was lacing his boots as he was getting into the ring, which was a nice little touch. I appreciated that. It just illustrated how spur of the moment this whole thing was. And Swerve, even when he came out, was still putting his t-shirt on. So it was Will Ospreay and Swerve Strickland against Blake Christian, not Blake Monroe, Blake Christian and Lee Johnson. Swerve and Ospreay, they dominated in the early going with some double-team offense. Ospreay landed a standing sky twister pressed on Christian for a near fall. Johnson tried to intervene, but he got tossed out of the ring. Ospreay followed up with a springboard splash. But then we heard the Young Bucks music, and the Bucks made their way out. Christian used the distraction to knock Ospreay off the apron with a kick, and then followed that with a corkscrew dive that took us into the commercial break. Johnson and Christian remained in control the entire break. Johnson hit a frog splash. Christian then hit a 450 on Ospreay for a near fall. Ospreay made the hot tag to Swerve, and with Christian trapped in the corner, Strickland catapulted Johnson onto his partner with a buckle bomb. Christian slid out of big pressure. Strickland, though, took a back bump, kipped up after Ospreay flew in and blasted Johnson with a hidden blade. And the super kick into the brainbuster combo connects. Ospreay signals to Swerve, who destroys Blake with a house call kick for the win. After the match, security had to separate Strickland and Ospreay from the Bucks. Strickland took the microphone and said, "We're not going through another year of this crap." I feel like that's what I said late last year. This Death Rider stuff. "We're not going through another year of this shit." And here we are now heading into July. He said the franchise and the feeling. Is that what Ospreay's calling himself? The feeling? I lose feeling in my lower body usually when I sit here by the time we get to hour 5 of the AEW pay-per-views. I can only imagine how long All In is going to be. But that's what he said. He did the franchise and the feeling against the Young Bucks, All In Texas. Ospreay said the Bucks might be the founding fathers, but the people that supported them are the reason AEW existed in the first place. And they're done with the power that the Bucks have been abusing, because they've been doing more harm than good. At All In, Ospreay wants them to put their EVP titles on the line. Just what we need here in this company. More titles. We don't have enough of those. Strickland flew off the top rope with a swerve stomp onto the pile of security geeks and referees, and the Bucks ran off before answering the challenge. So this is the obvious setup here for All In. Once Hangman beat Ospreay, and we knew that he was going to be wrestling Jon Moxley, they effectively substituted Ospreay for Hangman in this match. So Swerve and someone against the Young Bucks. Ever since the Bucks came back and Swerve got fucked out of the championship back at Dynasty, you knew that he was on a collision course with these two. And the only question would be, who is his partner going to be? So now we know. The addition of the EVP thing is, it's interesting in that I don't know if the idea is to, in storyline, strip them of their EVP status and do a story where they have no power anymore and the baby faces all mock them. And that would be nice because it's very played out at this point. So I'd be fine with that. I didn't read this as put your EVP titles on the line. Like, if we beat you, we become EVPs. I don't think that's what's going on here. I think it's just a case of if the Bucks lose, then in storyline, they are no longer EVPs in the company. But I will say this, though. They did not officially answer the challenge. If the Bucks accept without asking them to put something on the line, then they're going to look like a couple of fucking idiots. Why would they say yes? Unless Swerve and Ospreay have something that they can put on the line as well. Like, they could agree to the match and not the stipulation. What is the incentive for Matt and Nick Jackson to say, you know what? Okay, we'll put our EVP titles on the line, right? So they better have some real good follow-up to this as far as like, okay, you know what? We'll do that, but you got to put something on the line too. You got to sweeten the pot too. I don't know what that would be, but they better come up with something, because for them to just turn around and say yes would be very foolish. So after a commercial break, it was backstage to the Bucks, who called Swerve a dumbass, not realizing what he just did. Per the AEW employee handbook, he put his hands on an AEW official, which means he is suspended for the week without pay. Suspended for the week when he already worked the show. That'll show him. Kazuchika Okada showed up. He said that he wanted to introduce Matt and Nick to his new friends. And in walked Konosuke Takeshita, Trent Beretta, and Rocky Romero of the Don Callis family. Rocky said that it was long time no see, a lot of history between them against the Bucks, and now here they are on the same side. Matt Jackson told him, not for nothing, your boss is kind of a prick, but your goal right now should be to strap up Okada and make sure that he ends up as the new unified champion at All In, make sure that he hurts Kenny Omega, and what better way to hurt Kenny Omega than to hurt his golden lover? Trent Beretta told them, watch what I do out there, Kota Ibushi. I think you're going to love it. So the Bucks left at that point, as did Beretta and Rocky. Takeshita, though, he steps up to Okada. And now we got these two face-to-face. And the fans in the arena, they pop for it. And Takeshita told him, remember, this is temporary. And Okada smirked and he said, okay. Basically brushing him off as he walked away. So we are getting this. I talked a little bit about this last week, where I like Okada and Don Callis being paired up. I'm not sure if it's meant to be temporary and it's not going to extend beyond Texas. I'm sure it will, at least a little bit. I like the pairing, and if they wanted to, this is exactly what I said last week. They could use it as a way to eventually have Takeshita break away from the family and go babyface. And we get a match or a feud between Okada and Takeshita. I wasn't expecting them to tease it this quickly, but this was a clear tease of what's to come between these two. And I'm here for it. You know, start building up some heat within the family, you know, even if just a little bit. And then coming out of All In, you can go ahead and pursue that story. It doesn't have to be right away. You can play it out, you know, like what they're doing with the Hurt Syndicate right now. But this was, as soon as Okada got added to the ranks, I mean, this was the obvious long-term play here. I wasn't expecting them to tease it this soon. We then had the return of the Golden Star, Kota Ibushi, who made his surprise return, in case you missed it, and I'm sure many of you did, made his surprise return on Collision this past Saturday, came out to confront Okada, and here he wrestled Trent Beretta. And I said this on the sound off, you know, when I saw him come out there on Saturday, just physically walking out there, he looked ripped. He just looked physically in much better shape than he was the last time we saw him. You know, the last time we saw him, he was, for Kota Ibushi, he was, I mean, not that he's not in shape, but certainly for what we have seen Kota Ibushi as before, he was definitely not in Kota Ibushi shape, and he was just dealing with multiple injuries, I'm sure. He's not moving around very well. And here, he seemed to be moving better. You know, he was looking better. He really did look more like the Kota Ibushi of old. And you saw that here as well in this match. I thought he looked good. This was Ibushi's first singles match in AEW ever. And his first AEW match of any kind since 2023. For Trent, because it wasn't just Ibushi who hasn't been in the ring here in a while. For Trent, it was his first singles match since May of last year. So both these men have been dealing with the injuries. Now, that match was against Orange Cassidy. Orange Cassidy also happens to be out right now injured. So it's like the walking wounded here in this company. It's the walking wounded in WWE as well. But it's the walking wounded here in AEW too. So we got a back and forth scramble from both men in the opening moments. Ibushi gained a near fall by crucifix, followed by a standing dropkick. Rocky Romero was out there. He ran distraction that allowed Beretta to knock Ibushi out to the floor. Beretta then took the referee. That gave Rocky a chance to get his licks in before Beretta sent Ibushi into the barricade and then back into the ring. Beretta charged. Ibushi, though, hit a snap power slam for the reset. We got a standing moonsault by Kota for two, but as he looked for a half and half, Beretta managed to pull off an enziguri. And then he hit the Gotch-style pile driver, but Ibushi kicked out. So he begins to paintbrush Kota Ibushi. And all this does was just wake this man up. We didn't quite get murder Ibushi here. We haven't seen that version of him in many years. But this woke him up. Beretta hit a snapdragon. Ibushi no-sold it. He immediately popped right back up and hit one of his own. Beretta hit almost like a Rainmaker variation. Ibushi dragged Beretta to the mat, hit a standing double stomp before nailing him with a V-trigger, and then he finished him off with a Kamigoye for the win. Before Ibushi could really do much celebrating, we heard the coin drop, and out walked the Continental Champion to the ring. We got a stare down between these two, and then Okada retreated to booze. The crowd was not happy about that. And within seconds of this happening, we got a Tony Khan special. Like, Okada wasn't even backstage yet, and Excalibur was already getting the word in his ear from a very excited Tony Khan that it is official. And then the graphic was already up on screen. For Dynamite 300 next week, it will be Kazuchika Okada one-on-one for the first time in a very long time against Kota Ibushi. And I certainly cannot argue against a match between Okada and Ibushi on free TV next week. Even if they are a little bit older and they are a little more beat up, especially Ibushi, I'm not expecting a knockdown mat classic here, but you put these two guys in the ring together next week, you're going to get some good stuff. And I'm looking forward to that. And what I think we're getting next week is the return of Kenny Omega. You know, did the injury angle with him a couple of weeks ago. Now his boy, right, his best friend, his dear friend, is going in there against Okada. And we're going to get Kenny coming back to make the save. We're going to get a Golden Lovers reunion next week. That's how they reintroduce Kenny Omega to TV instead of, you know, holding him out until the pay-per-view, which I think would be dumb. As far as the match here, it was solid. It really wasn't anything more than that. It was a simple comeback match here for Kota. Next week, I think we'll get a better sense, you know, in the ring with Okada of how truly back, you know, Kota Ibushi really is. And if they give those two some time, I think that could be a lot of fun. Look, we may never get the Ibushi of 5 years ago even back. I feel like that Kota Ibushi is probably gone forever. It's like watching John Cena now. Not that John Cena was Kazuchika Okada, you know, in the ring even at his peak, but John Cena, the John Cena that we would see in the ring 10 years ago, 7 years ago, is not the same John Cena that we get in the ring now. Doesn't mean he can't go out there and have good matches. He just has to be in the ring with the right people. And I feel like that may be where we're at, you know, at this point with Ibushi. Ibushi is also, like, he's a guy where you look at him and you don't realize how old he is. You know, he's over 40 years old. He doesn't look it. But it's not like he's a young man anymore. And he's taken some abuse. I mean, he's had some very serious injuries. And some serious injuries for which he did not necessarily seek the medical care that he probably should have right away. And that's why his career has really been a blur over the last few years. You really just haven't seen him do a whole hell of a lot. So I hope he's you know, as close to 100% now, health-wise, as he can be. I'm not expecting the old Ibushi, you know, that guy that we saw in all those classic, you know, G1 matches and IWGP matches and everything in New Japan. But if we can get, you know, someone even 75 or 80% of that guy, then he could be one of the best in the company. It comes down to how is his health. And we'll get a better sense of it next week than I think we did here in the ring this week. Now, backstage, we had Jon Moxley. He was cutting a promo, sitting in a stairwell. How exciting. He said Hangman Page has an opportunity to grasp the prize that has slipped through his fingers before like sand. Moxley questioned if he would show up this time, but he doubted it. He said Hangman is too humble and he backs away from glory. Said that he had no stomach for Hangman's crybaby emo act. The world champion doesn't take a single ounce of crap from anyone. Says Page shies away from the gifts that he's been given, but he's not what the fans think he is. Now, while Hangman is debating personal turmoil, Moxley doesn't care about what he's playing around with, because at All In, he'll choke him out. And after All In, Page will be left looking for another job. I can't be the only one who tunes out for these Jon Moxley promos. I mean, they're all the same. They're all the same. They all kind of run together. I just cannot wait for this to be over already. God, I can't wait for this to be over. Can we please move past this? I'm so over this. Renee, she knows a few things about John Moxley. Renee Paquette was backstage with A.R. Fox. Oh, this was great. Talking to A.R. Fox, and she says that you've got a lot of momentum on your side now, even though you lost to John Moxley on Collision. I'm sorry. Come again? Momentum? Really? How so? I would love to know. Not only did A.R. Fox lose to John Moxley, not that there's any shame in losing to the world champion. Yes, he lost to John Moxley, but the bigger story here is that A.R. Fox has not won a singles match on AEW, I can't even say television, on AEW programming, okay? Since a dark match with Peter Avalon over 2 years ago. He hasn't won a single match in Ring of Honor, a singles match. And now that's the brand he's on primarily at this point. He hasn't won a singles match on Ring of Honor since November. And even the multi-man matches that he's been a part of, it's not like he's winning too many of those either. So again, I would love to know. People throw these words around and they try to convince you in these segments. Like you've built up a lot of momentum. Like this is not the first time they've done something like this. And I just sit here and I laugh. I'm like, momentum. If he was on like a small win streak, even if he was just beating low-level guys, all right, fine. You want to argue you're building some momentum, fine. Where's the momentum? Where is it? Did he buy like an old muscle car and name it Momentum? And maybe that's what she's talking about. He's building momentum. Did he buy a building downtown that he's trying to fix up? I don't know. I don't know who this momentum is. I would love to know. The bar has been lowered so much that getting some offense in, getting a little bit of offense in now in a match against the world champion evidently constitutes momentum. Ricochet interrupts Fantasyland here and says that Fox has momentum. Again with this, Fox has momentum. I can't. I can't. So Ricochet is still looking for people to join his crew. And even he's getting in on this and saying, you know, boy, you've been building up a lot of momentum. Is everybody brain damaged in this company? Like, what is this? What is this? He's been looking for some help to get gold in AEW. Ricochet invites Fox to team up with him tonight against Speedball Mike Bailey and Kevin Knight. And before Fox could even answer, because it looks like he's not interested in teaming with Ricochet, but before he could even answer, Ricochet shakes his hand and he thanks him for accepting, and he walks away. And that led into the tag match. It was Ricochet and AR Fox and all of his momentum behind him against Speedball Mike Bailey and Kevin Knight, right? Jet Knight? No, Jet Speed. Jet Knight. Jet Speed. That's what they call themselves. Ricochet should create a bald brotherhood. The bald bros. Yeah. Let's make a list of the available bald wrestlers in AEW that could potentially link up with Ricochet. Who else do they have? Moxley's bald. Josh Alexander is bald, but he's already in the Callis family. Let's make a list. The bell sounded. Ricochet told Fox, I'll start, but very quickly found himself being bounced around, so he tagged in AR Fox, who sent Mike Bailey outside. He swept the leg from Kevin Knight, and then he hit an over-the-top double stomp on the apron on Knight, which looked cool. Now, I say over-the-top. He basically flipped over-the-top rope onto the apron, but as he was coming down on the apron, he delivered a double stomp. So that was very cool. And then launched off of him with a somersault senton onto Mike Bailey. After a break, Ricochet and Fox, they were bickering on who to give a suplex to. They started shoving each other. That allowed Kevin Knight to backdrop Ricochet to the floor and make a hot tag to Mike Bailey. That's right, I forgot. How could I forget? FTR bald. That's right. So we got Ricochet, we've got FTR bald, we've got Claudio, Bobby Lashley, yeah, but Bobby Lashley is He's already got a crew of his own, though. He doesn't need Ricochet. Now we got to work on this. This roster needs some work here. So far, we have Dax, we have Claudio, and we have Ricochet. So double drop kick by Jet Speed. They followed with a rolling pop up lariat on AR Fox for a near fall. Bailey tagged in. Ricochet, though, smashed him into the ring steps, and that gave Fox a chance to hit a tope suicida. Back inside, Bailey tagged in Kevin Knight. AR Fox, though, he leapt for the tag, only for Ricochet to drop down off the apron and leave him high and dry. And Knight hit a sky high on Fox before going up top for the UFO splash to get the win. And thus, the momentum that AR Fox had apparently built up has been extinguished. Aw. You know, it's too bad because he was building up all this momentum. And now he has none. Hold on a second here. I think this is very appropriate here for poor AR Fox. All that momentum, it's just gone. He's been building it up for months. And just like that, in the blink of an eye. Poor bastard. So Jet Speed, they walked up to the stage where Tony Schiavone was waiting. He called them red hot in the tag team division. And I just was wondering, really? Well, what is the division really comprised of right now, right? I mean, you've got FTR and you've got the Bucks. Doesn't really feel like, as far as the tag team division is concerned and like going after the titles and all that, it doesn't feel like they're really involved in any of that. So you've got them, though. Got the Hurt Syndicate, you've got Jet Speed, and who else? I guess you got the crew, right? Leo Rush and Action Andretti. Big Bill and Brian Keith are still meandering around waiting for Chris Jericho to come back. I love how Jericho left, by the way. Like, they were clearly building to something where Big Bill was going to finally stand up to him, and the two of them were probably going to have a match. You would think Bill would win, he would break out as a babyface. But instead, Jericho just left. And so Big Bill he's still, you know, it's the learning tree. And he's just teaming with Brian Keith and just kind of not doing much of anything. I guess technically they would be a team. Is that the division? The Outrunners, right? We have the Outrunners. What tag team division? Oh, they have teams. I just named a whole bunch of them. But it just, I don't know. It doesn't seem like much of a division right now. Today's episode is sponsored by Factor Form. We all try to eat better or take supplements that we think are going to be good for our overall health. I've tried a couple of powders before, greens powders that tasted like chalk, and I could barely stand it. I couldn't imagine taking them every day, so that didn't last long. It's one thing to tolerate something you think might be good for you, even if it tastes terrible, but it's even better to find something you actually can enjoy using, so you're not torturing yourself. That's what I was able to find, finally. With Daily Greens by Factor Form. Factor Form is the sister brand to Factor Meals, which you've heard me talk about before. I'm a big fan of their meals as well. Factor Form was designed to work hand in hand with your Factor Meals, making the goal of better nutrition a hell of a lot more attainable, especially for people with very busy schedules who may think they don't have the time to worry about this kind of thing. Now there's no need to dread drinking greens. Daily Greens is a greens powder by Factor Form that in one scoop delivers 100% of your daily nutrients, filling whatever nutrient gaps you may have while supporting full body health and helping you feel your very best. It has a refreshing, citrusy taste that's actually enjoyable to drink. Just mix a single serve pack with water and you're good to go. It's nice to have a greens drink that doesn't taste like my neighbor's dead lawn. Daily Greens by Factor Form is made from real vegetables packed with a whole serving of kale and spinach without tasting like it. In fact, in a blind taste test, Daily Greens ranked number one in taste, texture, and aroma, beating out the biggest names in the industry. Factor Form's Daily Greens is packed with prebiotics, probiotics, and adaptogens to support gut health and reduce bloating. No added sugar, no artificial fillers, just whole food ingredients that work. So much so that 88% of users experienced improved digestion and gut health. I've been trying it out myself the past couple of weeks, and it's definitely been better than some of the others I've tried in the past. Start your day right with Daily Greens by Factor Form at factor75.com/solomonster to get 40% off plus free shipping on your first order. That's factor75.com/solomonster for 40% off plus free shipping. factor75.com/solomonster. Jetspeed, they go to the stage, and again, Shivani is calling them red hot in the division. Bailey said the tag team titles have been held hostage for too long, and it's time that somebody comes to their rescue. And then Knight recited some of the lyrics to MVP's old WWE theme song, you know, TikTok. Then they were quickly blindsided by the Hurt Syndicate, who beat the living shit out of Mike Bailey and Kevin Knight as MJF and MVP watched on and applauded. The two of them set up a table on the stage. Benjamin choked out Knight, and he laid him flat on the table. Lashley then delivered a spinebuster to Bailey onto his partner through the table. MVP takes the microphone. He says, now that they've taken care of that piece of business, he tells the production crew to hit their music, and they proceeded to make their way to the ring. As you can see behind them in the background, Jet Speed is just laying there in the rubble of that table in a heap. Let me talk about the match itself. The match itself here that we got, this tag match, it was fine. Jet Speed throwing out the challenge to the Hurt Syndicate for the tag team titles was expected. They've been teasing this and building to this now for a few weeks. But I will tell you this. If this angle here was supposed to get me excited to see Jet Speed challenging for the tag team titles at All In, then this was an epic fail. This did nothing to get me excited to see them challenging for the tag team championship. I mean, these guys got absolutely manhandled by these two here. Now, in the ring, the Hurt Syndicate, they address their enemies. It was time for them to address the roster. MVP was literally begging. Okay, that's the word he was begging somebody, anybody, to come out and stand up to the AEW Tag Team Champions. And to go back to this question of this division, right? Jet Speed is red hot in the AEW Tag Team Division. And you've got MVP in this ring right now on the microphone, begging, daring, challenging anyone. Come on out. We have no competition. We've laid everybody out. We've chased everybody away. Everybody is scared. Everybody's got their tail tucked between their legs. Somebody come out to challenge the tag team champions. Nobody comes out. And the Young Bucks were there. FTR was there because we saw them later in the show in a backstage segment with Stokely Hathaway. All these guys are there and nobody comes out. The gauntlet is laid down. The challenge was issued. Nobody has the balls. Like, in storyline, think about this in terms of just like kayfabe here. Nobody has the balls to come out and challenge these men. It makes the entire division look completely impotent. It's ridiculous. Not the first time that MVP has done this, by the way. And he basically challenges and dares somebody to come out, and nobody does. He said if Jet Speed could even stand up after the beating they just took, he would be willing to give them a title opportunity at All In on the condition that they can walk. And then he turns the microphone over to the young genius, Maxwell Jacob Friedman, who talked about unmasking and beating Mystico last week at Arena Mexico. He said that he's going to enter a qualifying match next week for the Casino Gauntlet match at All In, on the road back to what is rightfully his, not Dictator John's or the Crooked Cowboy, Hangman Page, his AEW World Championship. MJF said, hit our music, and instead they hit Mark Briscoe's music, and he came out on stage. And he said, everyone knows MJF can hear himself talk all night long, but production said they have a time limit, so if MJF would be so kind to get out of the ring so he could go do his business. MJF said he doesn't give a damn what time it is. They can take up as much time as they want because, unlike Mark Briscoe, they're actually stars. And he said that the fans relate to Briscoe because they have as many bills in their pockets as Briscoe has teeth in his mouth. Briscoe will do what he always does and lose. So go back to your ranch picking up chicken shit, you blue-collared bitch. Briscoe said he sees MJF's inner turmoil and pain. All these hurtful comments is from growing up being bullied. So the word of the day is empathy. So please allow Briscoe to empathize, as it feels like MJF is trying to make up for something. If Briscoe was MJF, going 30 years with a tiny kosher pickle in his pants, he would want to hang out with the Hurt Syndicate too. And that line popped Lashley and Benjamin. They were trying hard not to laugh here. We got kosher pickle chants from the crowd in Seattle. It's the best kind of pickle. MVP said they'll leave the ring for Briscoe to go ahead and do what he does better than anybody else in the company, which is go out there and lose. And they slowly walked by Briscoe, who headed to the ring for the upcoming four-way to see who would enter the casino gauntlet at All in the number one spot. And I got a comment. Actually, it was Duff. Shout out to Duff. Duff was wondering, well, why would somebody want to enter at number one in a gauntlet match? Wouldn't you want to enter at the end? And you got to remember that it works differently than your traditional, like a WWE gauntlet or, you know, other promotions that may have done similar types of matches, in that in AEW, it's one fall to a finish. So it's not layered. It's not tiered. It's not like you beat one guy, the next, like, the first person to score a win by pin or submission in these gauntlet matches, the gauntlet is over. It doesn't matter who's behind the curtain waiting in the back, you know, they're spitting on their hands, they're rubbing their hands together, they're getting ready to come out. If there's a fall in the ring, the match is over. And that person wins the opportunity to challenge for the world championship at some later date. So you want to be number one, because that thing could end in the first 2 minutes. That's why you want to be number one in these gauntlet matches. So it was Mark Briscoe, Konosuke Takeshita, Roderick Strong, and the Ring of Honor World Champion Bandido in this four-way match. And by the way, you know, they have not specified, as far as like getting a world championship match, if it's going to work similar to the way it did last year, where you get a contract, you can, you know, quote-unquote cash in. I don't remember if when Christian won that contract at All In, if he was allowed to cash in that night or took effect that week. I don't remember if they even specified. I don't know if it's just a straight ripoff of Money in the Bank or if the rules are a little bit different. But if it works similar to the way it did last year, you're going to get a contract that you have to sign first, but you get to basically cash it in anytime you want to. But they haven't specified that yet, so it's possible the rules may change this year. Now, late in the match, Bandido and Roddy, they collided into a double down. Both men rose up. They started swinging until Bandido hit a pop-up cutter. He wanted a frog splash, but Takeshita sent him crashing outside. Takeshita climbed, but Briscoe did the same, which caused Takeshita to crash and burn. Briscoe missed a froggy bow on Roddy. Both men traded chops and strikes until Strong hit an angle slam and the locomotion forearms until Takeshita flew in with a haluva kick. Takeshita hit a superplex, but with both men down, Briscoe and Bandido, they hit froggy bow and frog splashes respectively for close near falls. Bandido tried a 21-plex to Briscoe, but Takeshita came in to hit what Excalibur called a 42-plex, sending both men over with a double German suplex to a big pop. Strong escaped a blue thunder bomb. Hit a gut buster, but as he charged for a sick kick, he got planted by a Takeshita blue thunderbomb for a two count. Bandido blindsided Takeshita. That allowed Bandido to hit a 21-plex, but Takeshita rolled outside before he could follow up. Strong cut off a Bandido dive with the end of heartache, but before he could even get up or go for the pin, Mark Briscoe comes flying in with Froggy Bow to Roddy, and he covers him to get the win. Mark Briscoe is entering the casino gauntlet at All in the number one spot. And this here was really good. This is the best match on the entire show. Really good match. MJF and MVP, though, earlier, really telegraphed Briscoe winning by constantly pointing out that all you do is lose. Nobody does it better than you. You're a loser. So naturally, you would expect that Briscoe would get the win here, and he doesn't win very often. So where you can, you should want to throw him a win just to, you know, have him maintain some shred of credibility here in these matches. So Takeshita didn't win. I hope he still finds his way onto the All-In card. You know, likely will end up just being some multi-man tag match they shove him in. But we already know they're teasing the Okada match. At some point, that's going to be a story for him coming out of All In. So he may not have much to do at All In, but he's got that story at least coming out of that pay-per-view. Adam Cole, who has never felt as just, I don't know, as useless on this show as he currently does, even though he's got a title. He's the TNT champion. The TNT title used to really mean something. The TNT title used to feel like a top title in the company. It really did feel like you had the world title, and then right behind it, nipping at its heels, is the TNT title. And this championship has not felt that way in a very long time. Adam Cole holding it and taking it from Daniel Garcia hasn't really changed that. But Adam Cole is in the back, and he's got the TNT title over his shoulder. He's talking about the Don Callis family being a thorn in his side for far too long, and he issues an open challenge for his TNT championship tomorrow night on a special Thursday edition of AEW Collision. Open challenge to any member of the Don Callis family. These open challenges are back. When all else fails and all else is in doubt, just fall back on the open challenge. And they announce later in the show that he will be defending his title tomorrow night against Josh Alexander. I like that. John in the chat says Adam Cold. I like that. That's exactly what it feels like. Adam Cold. I'm going to have to start using that. Feels to me like they're testing the waters with Thursday for a possible move for Collision. This is not the first time Collision has aired on a Thursday, so that could be something to watch for. Yeah, I mean, that's true. Somebody mentioned Takeshita could still be in the gauntlet. He just won't be at number one. Yeah, you know what? That's probably where he'll end up. That makes sense. Now, following the men's four-way, we had no separation here. They went right into the women. I don't know why they didn't space these out a little bit. We went right from the women's or the men's four-way into the women's four-way for the number one spot in the women's casino gauntlet match at All In with Chris Statlander, Willow Nightingale, Thunder Rosa, and yes, the Ring of Honor forever champion, the Ring of Honor women's world champion, Athena. Athena actually appearing in a match on AEW Dynamite. She was in a multi-woman match on Collision, but who gives a shit about that? Dynamite is their A show. We don't get to see her on the show very often. This is the first time we have seen Athena in action on Dynamite since the Owen Hart tournament match against Mercedes, which was an excellent match. And as happy as I was to see her here, and when they announced these matches, I was actually on TNT last night. We had episode 100 of TNT on JD's channel, and the announcement was made about these four-way matches. And so I was reading what the matches were, and I said, like, this women's match, as compared to the men's, the women's match is the one that really had me the most interested, because you look at the lineup here, and so we've got some names. We got some names. We got some quality talent here in this match. As happy as I was to finally see Athena in a match here on Dynamite, this was not as good as the men's match. I don't want to say that it was a terrible match. It had its moments. You know, it was solid. But there was a lot of clunkiness, especially late in the match with Athena and Thunder Rosa. It just felt like they were not on the same page multiple times. And there was one very embarrassing spot that I guarantee you will absolutely make the next installment of Botchamania. Like, without question. Athena muscled Thunder Rosa up off the mat into a powerbomb position, and Chris Statlander went to go hit the ropes to go do something. And as she charged towards the ropes, Athena turned to face the opposite direction. Well, Statlander didn't want Athena's back. She wanted, you know, Thunder Rosa's back. So she comes off the ropes and realizes that Athena has turned. And so she now has to charge to the opposite side. And she runs across the ring again. And she hits the ropes on the other side. Only as she did that, Athena turned back around again. So Statlander comes off the ropes and has to awkwardly stop and basically just gives up and says, fuck this, as she just fires a forearm shot right to Thunder Rosa's back and knocks her down. She lands sitting, you know, on top of Athena, and then Statlander hits the ropes and comes off with sort of like a rolling blockbuster of sorts to Thunder Rosa. The only thing missing from this entire sequence, honestly, was the Benny Hill music. If you put the Benny Hill music to this, like this would have been perfect. This would have been perfect. And if Matthew is going to use this segment, then I hope he uses that song. So Willow and Statlander, they traded elbows mid-ring. Athena got involved, tried to suplex both of them, but they suplexed her instead. Rosa dove onto Statlander and Willow off the top rope and then delivered a double stomp to Willow for a two count. Athena pulled Rosa to the floor and demanded that Billy Starks, who was out there, go retrieve her Ring of Honor Women's World title. Rosa recovered enough to send Athena into the ring steps. They fought on top of the steps. Athena delivered a suplex from the steps to the floor. Now here comes Marina Shafir. She walks down to the ring and is providing the distraction for Willow Nightingale, who is looking down at her. Willow does not realize that in the ring now behind her, that's a four-way, so there's no disqualifications. In the ring behind her is Wheeler Yuta. And Wheeler Yuta, when she turns around, he takes a shot at her, but of course she ducks it to avoid it, and then Willow hits the ropes and comes off, and she pounces Wheeler Yuta. Chris Statlander uses this opportunity to deliver a tombstone pile driver to Willow Nightingale, her good friend, and she pins her to secure the number one spot in the women's gauntlet at All In. Like I said, this had its moments, but this was not as good as I was expecting it to be. You know, when they announced this match, I was more interested, way more interested in this one than I was the other four-way. And the way it worked out the complete opposite way. When all was said and done, the men had this beat, and this one was just, I don't know. This didn't work out the way I was hoping it would. Athena doesn't win. But hopefully she still makes it into the gauntlet. Yeah, like somebody mentioned, Takeshita didn't win, but he'll likely end up in the gauntlet. I feel like the only way this woman gets on this All-In card in Texas is to be in the women's gauntlet match. And she may not even win it, but I hope she at least makes it into it. You know, she did an interview this past week with Sports Illustrated, and she said, like, I'm going to be very bummed, super bummed if I don't make it onto that card. When they first announced that they were coming to Arlington for All-In this year, she was one of the few people they sent out there with Mercedes and Paul White to do media at Globe Life Field. Like, she was there doing press for the event. She's from Texas. She runs her own independent promotion out of Texas. She's a Texas girl. And for her not to be on that show, obviously, that's going to be very upsetting. And she said in the interview, well, we have a Ring of Honor pay-per-view the night before, so I'm sure I'll be defending my title on there. But I really hope I make it onto the All-In card. If she's not in the women's gauntlet, the only way she gets on the card probably is to be in some sort of multi-person match on the pre-show. So I hope she makes it into the gauntlet match. Clearly, they're setting up for a championship match, though, with her and Thunder Rosa. I would imagine that would take place the night before on that Ring of Honor pay-per-view, because the idea of her defending the championship on the All-In card against Thunder Rosa makes no fucking sense to me. You have a Ring of Honor pay-per-view the night before. Like, that's where the match should take place. To do Thunder Rosa against Athena at All In, you've been building this matchup for the most part on Ring of Honor TV. Why the fuck would you do that match on the All In card? Give Athena something else to do on that show. But you have an ROH pay-per-view on July 11th. I would imagine you want to main event the show with that match, or at least co-main event with it. Statlander taking advantage of the Death Rider's interference. It could cause problems, you know, between her and Willow. I think that with all this chatter about these women's tag team championships that are very likely going to be introduced soon in AEW, we'll probably get the announcement very soon. I think Statlander and Willow will probably be those first women to hold those titles together. Like, if we're going to have women's tag team titles, They've already been setting up some teams, you know, Megan Bain and Penelope Ford, Anna Jay and Ty Mello. Statlander and Willow would be my pick. And I think a pretty likely pick to end up with those women's tag team titles. So I certainly don't want to see either one of them go heel out of this situation. That's the last thing I want to see from either one of them, especially Statlander, who was a heel. And then the next day she was a babyface. Just out of nowhere. We don't need to go through that again. I think you're looking at your next probably inaugural AEW Women's Tag Team Champions. And they closed the show with Hangman Adam Page challenging for the World Championship in Texas. One-on-one against the Beast Mortos. Second week in a row finds himself in the main event here on Dynamite. That has never happened before. Gee, I don't know. All of a sudden, he's racking up main events. He's getting TV time in a way that he wasn't before. I guess it pays. I don't know. But Mortos fired off a headbutt that connected, and both men traded strikes until Page moved. Mortos crashed and burned outside. A springboard lariat dropped Mortos, and Page brought him back inside, hit a fallaway slam that took us into the final commercial break. Hangman blocked another Mortos headbutt, but the third attempt connected. Mortos swung wildly. He missed a discus lariat that gave Hangman a chance to hit one of his own. Mortos fought off a deadeye. Page, though, hit a pop-up powerbomb for a near fall. Hangman missed an Orihara moonsault, and he landed on his feet, but it looked as if his leg almost buckled beneath him on the landing. And that is a really stupid move to be doing this close to Texas. You are in the main event of their biggest pay-per-view of the entire year, challenging for the World Championship. You are 2 weeks away, or thereabout, 2.5 maybe, from this pay-per-view. And look, injuries can happen at any time, but it just feels like we're hearing about so many injuries lately in WWE, in AEW. Why even take the chance? Like, you don't need to be doing that. That's one of those moves you don't need to be doing. Save it for Texas. I mean, I wince every time I see him do that move, but to be doing it this close to Texas and taking that kind of risk when you really don't have to me, is just very stupid. So after landing back on his feet on the Orihara, Page is standing there, and Mortos sprints back into the ring and then back out again with a tornado dive that takes out Hangman. Back inside, Page wiggled out of a tombstone, and he answered with a poison rana and a lariat. And then he finished off the Beast. About 9 minutes or so, 9 or 10 minutes this went. Finished him off with a buckshot lariat for the win. After the match, the lights go out. And when the lights come back on, the Wyatt Six was in the ring. And they massacred Hangman Adam Page and the Beast Morto. No, I'm just spitballing now. Lights came back on and the Young Bucks were in the ring. The Young Bucks were in the ring. Hangman was on his knees, and they had Hangman by each wrist, and they delivered an EVP trigger. You know, I guess if they lose, if they accept this challenge and they lose it all in, it just becomes the trigger from now on. Matt and Nick, they screamed at Hangman that this is all his fault. Now we hear the Death Riders music. And John Moxley saunters out with Marina Shafir and Wheeler Yuta to pick up the pieces. Shafir handed Moxley a chain, and he wrapped the chain around Page's throat, choked him out. We got a little act of attempted murder here at the end of this show. So the Ops, finally, after a while, the Ops finally runs out to the ring. Samoa Joe, Powerhouse Hobbs, Katsuyori Shibata. The Bucks and Yuta held them off, though, for a little bit until Will Ospreay sprints out and they all break through. And the Death Riders and the Bucks, they bail through the crowd. Doctors are tending the Hangman here at the very end. And that was the close of Dynamite tonight. A good match. I think it could have used some more time. It felt like that finish was kind of abrupt and came out of nowhere. I would have liked to have seen these two go at it for a few more minutes, this being the main event. But it was good what we got. They put more heat on Moxley here at the very end. We'll see what Hangman comes back with now next week on episode 300. We've got two more Dynamites to go before we get to Arlington. Two more weeks to really, you know, heat up these key stories. And as I sit here now, I can't honestly say that I'm terribly excited. I know the matches themselves are going to deliver. Hangman in the main event with Moxley, they're going to have a really good match. Kenny Omega and Kazuchika Okada, it may not be the matches they had in 2018 and 2019, but those two are going to go out there and have a fucking classic match. Mercedes Moné and Toni Storm. Mercedes don't miss. Like, very rarely does she have a bad match. Whatever you think about her push or her or all the championships that she has, she delivers. Toni Storm usually delivers. She's had some great matches as well. Those are your three headline key matches at All In, and I expect every single one of them to be really, really good. And that doesn't even include Swerve and Ospreay against the Bucks, right? So on paper, the matches look great. But we got a couple of weeks left. I'm not feeling the excitement level for most of them. I feel like it's just not where it should be. I almost feel like I did heading into WrestleMania this year, which is not good. That's not a compliment, by the way. So they have a couple of weeks to really heat these things up a little bit more because we're heading into the home stretch. So let's start getting a little crazy. I expect to see Kenny Omega back next week, coming to the aid of Kota Ibushi. Collision is airing tomorrow night. This is the lineup for the show. Adam Cole. I do like that. Against Josh Alexander for the TNT Championship. FTR is going to call out the Outrunners. We have Brody King and Templario against Hechicero and Rocky Romero. Okay. Christian Cage and Nick Wayne against Big Bill and Brian Keith. Queen Aminata against Sky Blue. Kyle Fletcher against Kyle O'Reilly. The Battle of the Kyles. If you're watching tomorrow, enjoy. Dynamite 300 next week so far has Okada against Ibushi. MJF is going to wrestle in a qualifying match for the Casino Gauntlet match. And Mercedes Moné defends the TBS Championship against Mina Shirakawa. I think there's a very good chance we're getting a title change next week. I know, don't bet against Mercedes, right? Undefeated so far. But if they are going to put the world title on her in Texas, she needs to drop the TBS title. This is their last chance to do it. This is it, right here. It doesn't mean that if she loses next week, she has to go on a losing streak, right? It would just get that title away from her, and it would turn the tide back in favor of Toni Storm after what Mercedes did to her tonight. And that way, yeah, it might make the match on the pay-per-view a little more predictable, because I don't know that too many people would see Mercedes lose next week and think, oh, she's going to lose again at All In, give me a break. But I don't need to see her holding both championships. I don't see what that accomplishes. So we may get a title change next week on the show. It could very well happen. Hey, Steven Chapa, channel member for 50. I mean, I spotted that blue skull. We have very few blue skulls. It's like rarefied air. 50 months of channel membership. Thanks for all the content. You're very welcome. Thank you, Steven. I appreciate that very much. Let's take a look at your super chats. And get on out of here. Mercedes don't miss, says Snowdog. I said what I said. You don't have to like her, but you can't deny. This woman goes out there and she's had some pretty badass matches. It doesn't look like a whole lot of people are into Dynamite right now. This is gonna be a short segment here, it looks like. And we're not even close to be the booker, so it doesn't look like we're booking anything tonight. But let's go through these here. AJ with a $9.99. Thought for All Out. MJF wins the Casino Gauntlet over Darby. Hangman beats Mox. MJF takes the title from Hangman at the next pay-per-view, setting Darby's big win with a side headlock takeover. No more Death Riders. Yeah, I mean, I kind of... the idea that I floated last night on TNT was basically Darby, when he wins the championship, which is months from now, he wins it from MJF. Because it would bring their story back around, like almost full circle, right? Because that's long-term booking, long-term storytelling between those two. I mean, I know Darby has to get revenge on Moxley for almost murdering him, but if Darby was to eventually win his first world title from MJF, I think that would be very apropos. Amanda Nicole just wanted to show some support to my other favorite in the IWC. Hashtag who better? Thank you, Amanda. Duff's Vids. Who grants fishes wishes? A fairy cod mother. And what search engine does a turkey use? Google, Google. Ooh, that's pretty bad. Eh. If I had those big signs, those big placards with the numbers on them, I'd probably go 3 on that one. Maybe it's like a car engine. You're just getting warmed up. Ed Swoggle, the rotation of the earth really makes my day. Duff's Vids, took the shell off my racing snail, thinking it made him faster. Now he's just a little sluggish. Griga, bought cheap tickets for Ontario show. Hope fully good. Yeah, so the 300th episode of Dynamite next week is in Ontario, California. So, if you're looking to go to a wrestling show these days, I've said this before, WWE is going to price you out. And so, if you are looking for a pretty good deal on tickets, you can get some cheap seats to some of these AEW shows. And if nothing else, you know you're going to get some really good in-ring wrestling on those shows. So, AEW has... Yeah, they may not be packing it in the way WWE is, but because of that, you're going to get more bang for your buck when it comes to wrestling. Sharon Cox with $1.99. The Death Riders have go-away heat. Sharon, they've had go-away heat with me now for 9 months. You're preaching to the choir. I've been waiting for them to go away for a very long time. And Stephen Chapa. That's it. Stephen Chapa, 50 months of channel membership. Thanks for all the content, Solo. Stephen, again, thank you, brother. I appreciate your support very much. Stephen's been around for quite some time. So I appreciate you, brother. Thank you very much. That's all I got. That's it. Man, Dynamite feels kind of dead, doesn't it? Holy shit. I don't know, man. These Dynamite shows. Number one, Homo Sapien says, under 300 is such a sad day for Be the Booker. It is. It is. Forget Be the Booker. I mean, just to not hit that number, it's a sad day, period. It's a sad day, period. And there were some updates made to it as well, but we'll have to wait. It'll have to wait for another day. Now, let me just mention this, because I am considering doing something on Friday. Friday, SmackDown is the go-home show to Night of Champions. Now, I will be live on YouTube for Night of Champions on Saturday, for those wondering. I'll be live covering that show when it's over. And then Sunday, of course, is episode 918 of the Sound Off. Friday, though, is the go-home SmackDown. They're in Riyadh. My understanding is, and I have to check my trusty VPN, but my understanding is that the show is going to be airing live in certain markets at 1 o'clock on Netflix at 1 o'clock Eastern time. If that is true, and I can confirm that, what I may do is watch the show at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, my time, and then go live. I don't know if I would go live immediately after at 4:30 in the afternoon or go live at 8 o'clock that night. 8 o'clock is normally when it would be starting on TV here. But if I can watch it earlier, I'm not waiting until 11:30 to go live. So there's a very good chance that your SmackDown review is going to go on earlier. I just don't know how early in the day. Could be 8 o'clock at night. It could be earlier than that. So hopefully you guys are around. You will join me no matter what time I go live. I will be covering SmackDown. See, that's why you got to get yourself a VPN, man. This is it. Got a big European tour coming up in August. Remember that European tour in March? We're going to be going through that again in August. So if you are not signed up to a VPN, I got a great one for you. Just check the description down below. Get yourself a deal. Sharon, remember when Tony Khan brought... Remember when Tony Khan brought Giannis and Tento... We'll just say Giannis. No, I don't, actually. And Base Beerus says, when's the last time? Oh, actually, no, he was at the Boston show, wasn't he? Yeah, he was sitting in the crowd at that Boston show. Base Beer says, when's the last time a world champion was sued? Last week. Last week. His name is John Moxley. What about Raw this Monday? Well, Raw this Monday is airing earlier at 6 o'clock. So I don't think it's a case where, and they're in Pittsburgh, so there's no change. There's no change as far as like it airs super early in the day. I mean, they're not out of the country or in a different time zone. So Raw's going live at 6 next Monday. When Raw's over, I'm live. So yeah, I guess same thing Monday is what he's asking. I'll be covering the show a little bit earlier than usual. And the reason they're doing that is because they're taping SmackDown immediately after Raw. So that way they can air SmackDown on July 4th and not have people working on July 4th. That will be the first two-hour SmackDown, as my understanding is they are back to 2 hours for good starting next week. But we got one left. We got 1 3-hour SmackDown left. And if I can review it earlier in the day, then you can bet your ass that's what I'm going to do. BCOM, see clearly. I love Kevin Knight. Keep winning. He didn't look like he was winning tonight when he was laying in a pile of rubble. I don't know that he's going to fare much better at All In. Terrible Dry Chicken. Hey, Solo, I hope you have a great time in Texas enjoying the barbecue meals. Thank you, brother. I wish I had more time there. I'm flying into Texas actually the day before All In for the House of Glory show. So I'm coming in that afternoon. I'm working the show that night and I'm flying home early the next morning because there's just so much wrestling that weekend to watch and to cover. It just doesn't make sense for me to be on the road for the rest of the weekend and doing stuff remotely. I got to get home. So I don't even know that I'm going to be able to enjoy a good barbecue meal. If my flight is delayed at all going into Texas, I may not even be able to eat dinner. I may have to go straight to the show. So, but thank you. I'll enjoy my my one day in Texas. We'll have to get back there again at some point. I really enjoyed my time in Dallas for WrestleMania back in 2016, as Food Hive well knows. Hopefully we'll get back there again at some point. All right, be well. Stay safe. I've covered all there is to cover here. That's it. SmackDown Friday night. I'll keep you guys posted on when I'll be going live. Follow me on the socials. Follow me on X. That's probably where I'll post if I post anything. And I will keep you guys abreast of that. And then, of course, this weekend we have Night of Champions. Be well. Stay safe. Stay cool wherever you may be. I will see you guys on Friday at some point for the SmackDown recap. Until then. Take care, guys.